At some point, we realized it's not going to be those industrial players that are going to build the disruptive solutions. It's always going to be the Web3 native builders, the entrepreneurs that come and build disruptive cases.
Okay, so today I'm really happy to welcome on the show co-founder of Peak, Leonard Dorlochter. Welcome, Leonard.
Thanks so much for having me, Jamie.
So Peak is powering a global infrastructure revolution for scalable, green, decentralized, layer one blockchain for DPIN and machine RWA. And we'll unpack that a little bit later. But effectively, we've got quite a lot to talk about. So, you know, the first thing is DPIN generally, you know, what we mean by that, what do we mean by machine RWA? You guys are early pioneers in the space, coming out, or initially anyway, coming out of that kind of Berlin scene alongside very early investment of ours back in the day in IOTA, working with a number of kind of German industrialists. And it's interesting that that's still a theme. Like, why is that Berlin ecosystem, German ecosystem, so strong in the context of DPIN? Perhaps, you know, how has it evolved? Equally, you are also collaborating with Fetch.ai. You joined the Fetch Foundation and collaborating with Bosch and Fetch on what I think is called cross DPIN all-in-one sensor device for AI agents. So super exciting stuff. You've had a number of industry leaders joining you, Cisco Germany CEO Michael Ganser. So lots of kind of momentum forming there. And of course, we are running our first formal DPIN Basecamp Accelerator program with yourselves and our kind of shared friends, Borderless Capital, who also invest in Peak. So lots of synergies going on. We're really enjoying collaborating, working with you, as I know a number of our kind of portfolio and ecosystem partners are. So excited to get a little bit deeper. But as we normally do, before we get into Peak and DPIN and everything else, be good to learn a little bit more about yourself, you know, your journey as a founder, and what kind of led you to this opportunity that is DPIN and Peak.
Yeah, pleasure to talk about that. Like that, and really amazing that we have so much common history as well, right? You've been very involved in the IoT blockchain space right from the beginning. I would say 2017, right, where it kind of emerged. IOTA really were the pioneers there, creating that vision of a machine economy, machine to machine payments, and so on. And yeah, we stumbled upon, or like my founder journey started late 2016, early 2017, where one of my co-founders still was telling me about Ethereum and like the possibility to run applications in a fully decentralized way. And I basically fell down the rabbit hole and never looked back. And in 2017, then the concept of IOTA, we stumbled upon, right? We were in Berlin, they were in Berlin. And it was just fascinating because we felt like, wow, real world adoption machines, that is a fantastic use case. And that really inspired us to go in that IoT blockchain intersection. And also this one, we never left. However, late 2017, 2018, we then realized, okay, there is no scalable infrastructure yet to build those mass scale IoT applications in a public decentralized way, right? Because the promises of how IOTA was supposed to work, they didn't come true. And that's where we then thought, okay, let's focus on enterprises. Let's go and speak with the enterprises. Let's work with them and see which problems we can solve and whether technology actually can solve problems. So we then went on between 2018 and 2021 building enterprise blockchain IoT platforms, most notable working with Audi in the VW group on a decentralized charging project where they literally said, hey, the charging infrastructure is fragmented. Can't we put all charging stations and all cars on the blockchain and then they can do peer-to-peer authentication and payments? And this was kind of the first time, I would say, the now coined DPIN concept. We really came across that and we were like, wow, that makes a lot of sense. And also created then the basis for us in 2021 to say, well, enterprise blockchain is a great idea, but it doesn't work, right? It needs to be public and permissionless in order to disrupt because otherwise you have a company like Audi creating a blockchain platform for charging, but it's still centralized, just running a blockchain below. And yeah, this is where Peak was emerging end of 2021, not just building the blockchain itself, but also throughout those years of working with enterprises, we realized we need identities for machines, access control, payment, data verification, data storage. So we said, let's build all those functionalities as a decentralized backend using smart contracts on top of the blockchain and make it super easy to use and consume for builders of IoT blockchain applications. And then 1.5 years ago, the term VPN emerged for the first time. And that was incredible for us because we've been building a layer one for VPN all the time. And now it has a name. That means investors look at it. That means teams were finding us, right? Business development got much, much easier. And yeah, here we are. VPN Summer is just getting started and we're ready to launch.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, isn't it, that a lot of the time people are heads down, busy building on a thesis that they have, often across cycles. And really, it requires this kind of, internally, we call it like meme fit or narrative fit, right? All of a sudden, it's the hottest thing. And it's like people are talking about it like it's an entirely new thing that nobody's been thinking about. And really, there are, you know, many builders like yourselves who have already built out infrastructure, who already have proof of concepts, use cases, increasingly at scale. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Your time's come and you kind of patiently waited for that wave. Maybe just from a founder perspective, how do you navigate not being in vogue, right? So when you're in vogue, it's easy, right? And now that the narrative is established, assuming you and other participants can execute on that, but how do you stay focused and keep up morale when you're out of narrative?
It was super, super tough because when we were raising our seed round in 2022, just before was DeFi summer, NFTs, no one cared about machine economy or investing into a layer one for IoT. It's like all investment went towards, I mean, Metaverse was also around, so right there. So we weren't hitting any narrative. And it was super difficult to fundraise and get backing. And there was even a conversation where we were like, maybe we should pivot and, you know, focus on DeFi because that's better than having to close the doors. But then we just kept on going. We're like, no, it makes sense. We know this is going to happen. Or we had that belief, even though it was really difficult to believe in it for a long time, because a lot of people were saying, okay, this is way too visionary. A lot of investors said, hey, our fund cycle is 5 years, so we don't think this is happening anytime soon. However, we then found a few investors that really got deep and were like, okay, there might be something. And then, you know, how the rounds go, right? And then you get some momentum. And at some point, we were able to close our seed round. And just before the bear market came, right? Like also the lead investor, they signed, and then Terra Luna collapse happened. And they were like, okay, guys, all our funds are frozen. Not sure we can deploy. And we were like, holy crap. But luckily, there was a way, and we were able to close the round just before the Terra Luna collapse, just before the bear market basically started, and then had the capital to build throughout the bear market. However, of course, the tough time was before that. Going further into the past, actually, when we did that enterprise blockchain, right? We were like, okay, maybe we can build many different enterprise blockchain networks and then connect them down the line through a public network. That was our initial strategy. Looking back, of course, that couldn't work, but we were raising a round, equity round, based on that strategy. And we had a lot of strong investors committed. However, there was one industry player as the kind of the anchor investor who also wanted to join the round. And they pulled out because VCs didn't join the round because they didn't see that case. And we were about to close and say, okay, we tried that enterprise blockchain, but that really, that didn't work. And then we're forced to think about, hey, what is wrong with our strategy? And then realized, no, like that way of, you know, you're not decentralizing a machine economy by building different centralized enterprise blockchain networks and connecting them through a public network. It all needs to be on a public network. That's how the disruption comes in. And yeah, so there were many, many tough moments along the journey.
Yeah, but I mean, it's super interesting, and thanks for being so candid about it, right? I mean, the fund cycle is incredibly important because we've experienced this multiple times. So I remember back in the day, you know, talking to some of the bigger tier one VCs about Fetch, for example. And similarly, they said, yeah, AI and blockchain, this is like 10 years away, let alone, you know, 5 years away. And so even though I might conceptually buy into what you're saying, I can't deploy capital into this narrative. Now, of course, those same VCs, maybe with their second, third, even fourth fund, are kind of piling into it now. But it does take conviction. And as a founder, you're kind of torn between being pragmatic, yeah, you know, figuring out the narrative to lean into, both for fundraising, you know, private fundraising, public markets, and then, you know, your conviction. And it's interesting that actually the thing that forces conviction is often when you run out of kind of pragmatic solutions, right? It's like, well, actually, okay, look, if we're really going to do this, like, yeah, what do we really believe in without kind of compromising to like an investor and what they might think?
Totally. And it was so hard so many times. However, I mean, I think being three founders and our setup really helped there, because we were able to, yeah, be strong for each other. And when one person was maybe a bit down, you know, the others two were able to keep pushing and taking it in turns. So that really helped and building up resilience through those times. And of course, now where we had that conviction and we're seeing it, now it's even more fun and it's even more amazing to see that the entire market is seeing what we've been seeing. And of course, like, the reward is extra, extra big now. So yeah, I wouldn't want to miss anything, even though it was very hard to get to the point where we are today.
Yeah, and it's all part of that journey, right? And it's never direct. It's always indirect, yeah, about how you arrive there. But and I think the point of having co-founders is really important. We prefer teams with co-founders, especially in Web3, just because there's so many things to juggle, right? Business model innovation, go-to-market, BD, technical regulatory issuance, market formation. So, you know, the more skills, the mix, the better the mix you've got founders, the better, let alone that kind of founder support group and kind of working through problems. So you were talking about this inflection point, really, and we were talking to a lot of the same participants at the time, where there was this big narrative around, you know, private, not public blockchains. And, you know, really, it's only this year where the zero conversation that I'm aware of about private blockchains anymore, for the first time probably ever. So, you know, what drove that shift, do you think, where enterprise kind of have finally embraced the idea of, you know, public networks, and why that's ultimately, if not the only solution, you know, the better solution?
Yeah, I think, and I mean, there was IBM, there were many companies taking a massive bet, right, on building private enterprise blockchain networks. And I think also many of the early use cases, be it supply chain, traceability, immutability of data, were kind of the ones where people are thinking, okay, we can use a private enterprise blockchain to do that. And then also the thought about, well, this is all public, it's a public decentralized database, right? So to a certain degree, I mean, it's an internet computer at the end, but this is also not the understanding that people had back then. So they were like, okay, enterprise is never going to put their data onto a public ledger where everyone can see that. So I think that was kind of the thought process behind it, and also the thought process we had. If we would have told Audi, hey, let's build that on Ethereum, they would have said, no way, we're not going to do this. We want to have our own network and the fees are way too high and all of this, right? I think actually that's a good point as well. That was a big reason of enterprise blockchain. There was no scalability and it was super expensive in terms of just having Ethereum really around between 2017 and a few years later. So there was no feasibility to build industry-grade scalable applications. And a lot of people thought, okay, well, then we need to build a private network because the fee structure we can kind of figure out and make it much cheaper for the enterprises. So I think that was another driving factor as well. And I think it simply took time until the market understood where the true value of a blockchain is and where the disruptive use cases lay. What was eye-opening for us when thinking about smart cities, right? If you have a smart city, and let's say you have multiple private blockchain platforms, you can create interoperability, but you still have, you know, somewhat closed systems. And in order to really create an open ecosystem where everything can talk to each other, transact, buy goods and services, it needs to be public and permissionless. And yeah, I think Chris Dixon said like it's scoremorphic in terms of a lot of the use cases where you think, okay, I can do supply chain tracking in Web 2. Now I do supply chain tracking in Web 3. However, we tested that as well in a concept with Gucci back then where we realized it doesn't make sense to do supply chain tracking on a blockchain because it's anyway just internal for them. They can also use a normal database. So I think this is kind of why a lot of people thought about enterprise blockchain networks. And now we're like, no, it's a global internet computer state machine. And that makes it really useful and not, you know, like having immutable data.
Yeah. And I think things like open mobility, you know, is multimodal. You're going to use different forms of transportation to complete a journey potentially. So it forces the idea of this kind of interoperability and transferability and everything else. And I guess also innovations around zero knowledge technologies and stuff now mean that it's not public by default.
Yeah. So
enterprise can protect supply chains a little bit more and they don't have to necessarily reveal too much, right?
Yeah, the privacy can be kept. Yeah.
So as we said at the top, you know, there's been a consistent theme around DeepIn, at least in a Western context. I know China and Asia kind of has its own narrative. You know, Germany is kind of still very much at the heart of this, right? If you look at, you know, where you guys are based, at least born out of, as a startup, you look at the participants that are joining foundations like Bosch, some of the enterprise that you're kind of partnering with, that German industrial base has been a very early adopter, right? You know, they've been running almost every German industrialist from Siemens to you know, Volkswagen Group, you name it. They've all run proof of concepts several years ago, actually, and still today. Why is that? You know, why are they early adopters? What are the learnings? You know, has their thinking evolved? And do you think that they're going to continue to be a leader, or are we beginning to see like a more distributed adoption of DeepIn?
Yeah, I think what really helps in Germany and also inspired us in the beginning, there are many machine manufacturers. So you have a lot of cars, you have a lot of charging stations, you have a lot of devices. And so that is there as a basis. However, what's also super important is that in Germany, we don't have strong platform players. We don't have Amazon, AWS, Azure, Microsoft, and so on and so on. So a lot of those big industrial players also think about, okay, how can we build up new revenue streams and platform business models without giving all the value to those big hyperscalers from the US or China as well? So this is interesting where, let's say, you build charging hardware, you're building parts for cars, or you manufacture cars yourself. Like, how can you build now a new platform business model on an open system, right? And for example, you build in some components into a car, you build a car wallet, and then whenever that car is charging or parking, and all of that happens on a blockchain, the OEM or the supplier can earn a little cut of that transaction, kind of as a service. And this is really where I think German industrial players see an opportunity to participate in the digital economy, to create new revenue streams, which go beyond manufacturing the hardware itself, without giving all the value to big tech. And we missed that internet industry in Germany and in Europe. And I think this is kind of like a chance to join digitization and Web3 and not Web2.
Yeah, and I remember, I'm going to say it's Siemens, but it could equally be one of the other players, maybe Bosch. But I remember speaking to the individual that was leading innovation across the group who was looking at blockchain then. And he framed it as, look, we don't want to be left just making the things in the Internet of Things. You know, we don't want to forgo the opportunity that's going to be happening at the software layer, primarily in the context of AI, right? We don't want to, if you think about what a car becomes when it's autonomous and electrified, well, it's not much, right? It's effectively a computer. Everything else is highly commoditized. And so if they were to just hand that over to US big tech, you know, they would be on the short end of the stick. And as you say, in a geopolitical kind of context or geotechnical political context, Europe's kind of sat between China and the US. And so without there being any one dominant software player, it kind of forces collaboration or encourages collaboration across that industrial base. So I think it's really interesting the way that you kind of frame that. So then let's talk about what you mean in the context of DPIN and what was the kind of framing machine RWA. Yeah. And then more specifically, what Peak is as a technology stack.
So Peak as a technology stack, so we used Substrate as a framework to build the blockchain. And then as I said earlier, we were really thinking about, okay, we not just want to provide any layer one, right? Because if you have a general purpose layer one, there are many out there. But we want to build the best possible layer one for machines, for devices. And Substrate allows to create so-called pallets, which are written in Rust, and you make them part of the runtime of the blockchain. So they're not even running as smart contracts on top, but they're actually part of the node software itself. And we develop many pallets, such as identities for machines, role-based access control, payment logics, data verification, and so on and so on. Because the thesis was, if we make it super easy for builders to come and just kind of plug into this decentralized backend, many people will choose Peak because it's faster and easier to build. And actually, that came true because we also made it through a JavaScript SDK even easier to just consume those functionalities. So you don't even need to go on the smart contract level, but you can simply copy 13 lines of JavaScript code and all your machines have identities on the network in a fully decentralized way without any middleware or something. It's directly on chain. And this is kind of where we've been building this decentralized backend on top. And kind of now when speaking with the DPIN teams and builders, many of them, they don't have blockchain engineers on board. They don't want to go on that level, right? They're focused on hardware. They're focused on apps. They want to easily plug into the chain. And yeah, this is what we will continuously improve and just make that SDK, that functionality set richer and richer. And we just get feedback and develop it further based on the feedback we're getting.
Because if we're talking about IoT, I mean, some of these devices can be like really basic forms of hardware. So like, what's the most simple device that could be, you know, running this kind of software and participating in the Peak network?
The beauty is Substrate also comes with a small light client. So it's possible to go on to really smart devices. But of course, a super small sensor would be too small. Like, there needs to be certain requirements in order to communicate to the blockchain and sign transactions. However, then there are many ways of, for example, having then a super small device communicate through a Raspberry Pi, for example, a device that's a bit bigger, or even use a smartphone to connect to the smartphone and speak to the network. So that is very device specific and individual. And also there where the strategy is, how can we use and leverage as much existing hardware as possible to make that process easy? So we've integrated with Home Assistant, for example, which is the leading open source smart home software, where I think, I'm not sure, but thousands of devices are already supported by Home Assistant. And Home Assistant has hundreds of thousands of installations worldwide. So technically, all those devices can be connected to the Peak network using Home Assistant, and Home Assistant is running on a Raspberry Pi locally in the house where it's installed. So this is, for example, one way, or we're working a lot on, or we're supporting a lot of smartphone deepens, where it's about, okay, how can we use the smartphone, which is such a strong computer that locally connects to devices and machines, or that even has sensors and cameras itself to generate data and contribute to a deepen. So they're kind of different ways. And yeah, ultimately, that's also where we're collaborating with Bosch and working, like really building up this enterprise adoption system and program, because ideally the software's in the devices and machines when they are manufactured, and it's kind of Web3 compatible and native from the beginning. However, that is of course a bit of a longer process, requires a lot of collaboration, and you first need to show them really, okay, what is the future revenue you can make here.
And how do you approach kind of the connectivity challenge, right? So I remember with IOTA in the beginning, they, rather than a blockchain, they had this distributed acyclical graph, I think it was, DAG. And the idea was, you know, sometimes, I don't know, let's say it's a shipping container, you know, it might not be always, all the things on it might not always be connected to the internet. So the network can't require this kind of continuous connectivity, but somehow the state of these devices can be updated whenever there's kind of connectivity. How are you approaching that kind of the connectivity issue related to devices and states of devices?
Yeah, so that is really use case specific as well, where, for example, a device that is always online because it has a SIM card or it communicates through LoRaWAN as a connectivity option, then it can continuously transmit data. But exactly like you said, on a shipping container where it might have no signal for quite some time, there could be a device on the ship which is speaking to all the sensors all the time, is kind of securely recording and storing the data, itself then has a SIM card. And as soon as it has a signal again, it kind of signs the data, stores the hashes on chain, and delivers it to decentralized or centralized database to store it. So that is then really implementation specific. And this is, I think, also, we try to build a lot of use cases with enterprises and then move to, hey, we're building the best possible tool stack. It's kind of building a toolbox, and then builders can come and implement it the way they think it's best. And maybe what's interesting there as well, since we had this heavy enterprise focus, at some point we realized it's not going to be those industrial players that going to build the disruptive solutions. It's always going to be the Web3 native builders, the entrepreneurs that come and build disruptive cases. And then the enterprises are great partners to scale the cases, to build hardware for them, or, you know, like to offer their users and customers to scale a deepened case. But the innovation is not going to come from that player. And that shift was also really important in our history.
Hence why we're doing this accelerator program together, right? That, you know, you're building out these primitives and the kind of middleware that will then allow people to commercialize the technology, right? They'll be able to build applications, presumably some of the middleware as well, commercialize at the application layer. And that might be enterprise. It might be, you know, startups with a kind of SaaS type proposition that they want to go there, right? So maybe you could talk to the type of builders and the types of use cases that you're kind of hoping will kind of come out of the accelerator program.
Yeah, so I think when it comes to the types of builders, what we've seen, since we're real world impact focused as well, we tend to attract a lot of builders as well that do want to build something that has meaning. And right in Web3, there are many people who come in and just maybe are more focused on making money than actually building something meaningful. And so in terms of types of builders, this is really the crowd we have in the ecosystem, and we want to attract further because it's really fun to work on those cases. And then in terms of which use cases we look for, in terms of traditional deepen, it's a lot about physical hardware and machines. So be it cars, be it charging stations, drones, as sensors, and so on and so on. So a lot of the focus of Peak is really focused on machines. However, we are also, you know, supporting AI deepened projects or data storage projects. So we call it fungible and non-fungible to a certain degree, right? Where you have a unique piece of hardware somewhere, or you have a distributed database or server infrastructure. Both are deepened cases, and we're focusing on both. However, I think due to our history, where the cases where there's specific sensors or hardware is a bit more common in our ecosystem. However, there are great synergies between AI deepens and others. Just one example, if you want to do data verification, we have a tier two data verification where machine learning is kind of checking if the data is authentic or not. And if you can run a trusted or trustless machine learning model that is checking that, it's a great synergy, creating trust in the machine economy. And ultimately, we want AI models to run in a trustless way as well.
Yeah, and maybe we'll kind of get into that convergence, deepin and AI in a second. As I understand it, we've kind of got three core areas that we're looking at around the thesis of the program. One is digital infrastructure networks, so decentralized compute, file storage, connectivity. We've got infrastructure and tooling, you know, middleware and everything else for kind of the base layer protocol. And then the data networks, sensor-driven data networks, bring your own device and identity. Actually, sorry, fourth one, which is service networks, which actually is quite a big opportunity, right? So improved Web 2 services and then Web 3 enabled services as a kind of distinction.
Yeah, no, 100%.
So then maybe let's kind of come back to that agent-based thing. So I think I said at the top end, there's this collaboration, which I guess is points to the direction of travel. So cross deepin, all-in-one sensor device, running AI agents. That's a collaboration between Peak, Bosch and Fetch. Maybe you could talk to that to try to kind of bring to life that opportunity.
Yeah, so this is really is a fantastic match because, of course, Bosch is creating all those amazing hardware. And that specific device, the XDK, is kind of a sensor hotel. So it's one device that has 13 sensors measuring all kinds of things, be it light, be it sound, be it location, and so on and so on. So you can give that device an identity on the Peak network, and all that data can be verified and kind of, you know, used wherever and sold to whoever is interested in buying it. And then you take a Fetch agent and add it on top. And that agent can now go and say, hey, I have that type of data. Who is interested? And can really look on the market who would be potentially interested in buying that data. So instead of just having not smart data stream going anywhere, you add intelligence on top of that device. And this is really where Fetch AI agents and agents in general on Peak make so much sense, because you can add that level of intelligence on top of all the use cases where machines can look for goods and services or offer goods and services. For example, be it a house or a washing machine that says, hey, it goes to the grid and buys cheap energy to wash at a cheaper price, or the house generates energy and sells it into the market whenever energy is more expensive. And adding that intelligence on top of any deepened use case is really where AI agents come in.
Yeah, super exciting. And of course, also points to collaboration opportunities in this merger that's happening with Fetch, Ocean, and Singularity around the ASI stack. Of course, Ocean also being born out of the Berlin ecosystem.
Yeah.
And early Ethereum community. So it's going to be interesting to see collaboration totally with that wider stack. So you have your upcoming network launch. Maybe you could talk about the roadmap and some of the things that we can be expecting from the Peak network over the next 12 months or so.
Yeah. So in terms of the launch, it will happen in Q2. That's for sure. I mean, you never can say exactly in which week because it depends on many things. There will also be a community sale before that. So something exciting for the community. Next week, we're going to meet in Dubai, right? So there's going to be a big presence there. We will have a first ever reveal on the conference. It's going to be super exciting. It has to do with autonomous robotic machines and tokenization. So there's some super interesting things coming up. And then like the ecosystem is growing at a super, super fast pace right now. Amazing people are joining the team. So in terms of ecosystem growth, launching the network, of course, we are nonstop building, improving the functionalities and all of that. And then in the second half, there will be a lot of enterprise involvement as well, right? Because we see our role not only providing that layer one, but also merging the real world with Web3, because we need to get legacy players on board to make it simple. Some of the infrastructure needs to be made compatible. And we see a really unique opportunity there also as Peak with our brand to be able to speak to all of those companies and maybe be a bit more real world friendly than a lot of the Web3 spaces today.
Yeah, so I mean, we're super excited about Token 2049 as well. One of the only events I'll be doing this year personally in IRL. We've got a big OV turnout, both in terms of OV staff, leadership and portfolio. So I know the ASI going to be doing a big meetup there, hopefully after a lot of the governance votes have gone through and that's all passed. I'm really excited about your demo from the sounds of it. And it's interesting, it's a great to be doing it. And we published a paper in, 2018 with Dubai on smart cities and the convergence of these technologies, it included Fetch and Ocean. And so it's great to see you guys making lots of inroads in that region too. Maybe just to kind of summarize the accelerator program as we kind of close off. So applications for the DPN Basecamp program are already open. If you go to outlierventures.io/basecamp/DPN Basecamp with a kind of hyphen in the middle, or just go to outlierventures.io and you'll kind of find your way there. You'll find the application page. The program will start late May 2024, duration of about 3 weeks. It's virtual, which means we can work with the best founders no matter where they are in the world. That's really important to us. I know it's really important to you that this isn't just concentrated in any one particular geography. And we'll be working with you and, of course, Borderless Capital, partner of both of ours, investor in you. Actually, second program we've run with them as a venture partner. So for those that don't know, they're a VC that backed Peak and a number of other companies in our portfolio. A great investor to have on the cap table as well. So, you know, between the three of us and several other partners that we hope to kind of bring in and through the ecosystem over the course of the program, really powerful network to kind of activate. And I think, you know, just even hearing your journey in the context of DPN, lots of kind of founder insights that we can kind of jointly share with them. Please do make sure, firstly, you catch the demo. Do you know what day you're going to be doing the demo on?
Yeah, it's going to be on the 18th, and we have a booth, so the demo is going to be at the booth all the time. But yeah, on the 18th for the first time.
Okay, very cool. Well, look, again, we're super excited about this program with you, and I think, you know, the synergies with us and our kind of wider ecosystem are hopefully really obvious to anyone that's listened to this. So just want to say a big thank you to you and the team for coming on, and Leo, really excited to see what happens next week at Token 2020.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a great pleasure.